Hello, I'm Chris Kratzer, and welcome to the Grace is Brave, Be Brave podcast. I hope you're doing well, and hope that you are enjoying the holiday season. I hope the holiday season that you're, meeting it in such a way that it's soft for you. Because for a lot of folks, this season is not pleasant, and it brings with it a lot of pressure and a lot of stress and anxiety. And so I hope it's soft. I hope that whatever your situation it is, that you have some level of peace and satisfaction in it all, because this time of the year can be difficult. And I think it's difficult for all of us, no matter, you know, what we bring to this table of the holidays and what our circumstances are. If it's difficult for you, just know that you are not alone, and we all stand together in this season. So, hey, I want to talk about kind of the behind the scenes of this book that I've written. It's now been released on Amazon a few weeks ago. The title is Stupid Shit Heard in Church and the Truth That Will Wipe You Clean, 80 Messages to Honest for Sunday. And for those of you who have read it, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope you're enjoying it, and I hope it's been meaningful for you. And so I wanted to kind of pull back the curtains, look underneath the iceberg a bit, and share some really, I think, important parts of what's gone behind the scenes to make this book a reality. Very interesting stuff. You know, I referenced the iceberg because, you know, as we all know, what you see on the surface is just a small part of the actual iceberg, like 75%, maybe more, is underneath the surface and you don't see it. Yet it has a very important part, obviously. If what's underneath doesn't happen, what's on the surface doesn't happen at all. So I kind of want to really dive in and really gaze into the behind the scenes of Stupid Shit Heard in Church and what has transpired in the background, the backstory of all this. And, you know, I was doing a podcast interview, and Stuart Deloney asked me a question that I wasn't prepared for. He said, "Hey, Chris, what feels different about this book as compared to the first book that you wrote?" And I wrote Leatherbound Terrorism back in 2018. And, you know, I really wasn't prepared for that question. And I had to really think about it for a moment, because the book really does feel different. And, you know, with Stupid Shit Heard in Church, you know, there's been an increased anxiety about it. I guess you could say a nervousness about, you know, the book, how it will be received, you know, what kind of difference it's going to make, if any. And it's not that I'm insecure about the book per se. I mean, I have thought through every word, every sentence, the book title, every aspect about it has been put through the curlers and really given a lot of intentionality to the book. But that still doesn't dismiss or eclipse the anxiety that anyone would have, any artist, any writer would have when you get on stage and you put yourself out there. And I think it's for writers, it's important, A, to acknowledge that, and then C, to talk about that. Because if you put anything out there as an artist and you're not trembling a little bit, then I wonder if it's really sincere, if it really has captured your true heart and soul. And I really feel like this book has done that more than the previous book. I mean, you know, just the title alone is putting out there, you know, some real things. And then the content of the book, it touches on so many different things. It has so many different levels, you know, just from, you know, the surface levels to very deep things. that if you read things through a few times, you're like, oh gosh, I didn't see that the first time, but now I see it there. And there's just a lot of dots to connect. There's a lot of layers to it. And because of that, there's a good bit of heightened vulnerability to the whole thing. And I think that's really important for people to understand, that behind these books that people write, a lot of times there's a certain amount of vulnerability, hopefully, that a writer, an artist has to work through before putting something out there. You know, I think people look at me and say, oh, well, he's just a very, you know, assured and, you know, assertive, and he must be completely confident and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not really the case, at least behind the scenes. Like I said, everything I put out, you know, I stand by it, you know, but that doesn't negate the process behind it, which often has some level of vulnerability and the anxiety and the questions that go with that. And, but this book has felt different. And, you know, in my old evangelical days, we would think about spiritual warfare, and that the reason why there's been so many challenges getting this book out there, which there have, which is a big part of what I'm going to talk about, the behind the scenes challenges. But I don't really believe in that stuff anymore. I don't really believe in spiritual warfare in the way that evangelical Christianity at least understood it and talked about it. But I'm beginning to realize now, as the book has been out there for a few weeks and people are already experiencing it, and the feedback that I'm getting is like, wow, this thing has some impact in a positive way that I hadn't imagined it would. And so I kind of feel like maybe some of the challenges that have gone behind this in a heightened way have been precursors to the heightened impact that this book apparently is having. And I'm thankful for that. And I guess that gives reason to why there's been significant challenges and just, you know, just a uphillness to this book that wasn't previous to the other book, that there wasn't with the other book. So, really kind of want to dive into some of that, you know, because it really first started, you know, with the writing of it, actually. I mean, I had been writing those little, you know, messages. Here's a message that you probably won't hear in church this morning. I've been doing that for years on Sundays, not every Sunday, but, you know, as much as I felt inspired to do it, I tried to do it. And someone came along not too long ago, maybe 6 months or so, and said, hey, Chris, you know, man, it'd be cool if you would put all those together in a collection, and so that we could read them and that we could refer to them, and we could, you know, we don't have to go chase them down. And I thought to myself, wow, that is actually a pretty good idea. And, you know, probably wouldn't take much, you know, effort at all to really try to do that. And boy, was I misguided. That took a lot of effort to put those all together and to put them into a collection and to make sense of them as a whole. Sometimes it's easier just to start from scratch when you're writing a book than it is to take something that you've already written and try to figure out, you know, how it all goes together. And thematically they do, but man, some, as you'll discover, you know, in reading the book, that there's a lot of bobbing and weaving, a lot of going from one topic to the other in just a couple pages. So that was quite the journey of doing that, you know, and reading through those and going, wow, you know, these are intense. So there was a process to that. It wasn't as easy as one might think it was. It was pretty difficult, more difficult than just writing from scratch. But that was just the beginning of the challenge, you know, because then, you know, once it was, you know, once all the material was put together and, you know, the first chapter was written, kind of introducing the whole concept and structure of it all and the meaning of it all, you know, then came, you know, finding an editor. And the lady who edited my first book, you know, sweet lady, very accommodating, very nice, you know, very professional. I couldn't find her. And I would call people that knew her, and even, you know, some people who were close to her tried to reach out to her. But, and I don't know, but for whatever reason, she made herself unavailable to this project. I don't know if secretly she hated the first book and just did it, you know, because she felt sorry for me or something. But she wasn't available for this book for some reason. And I don't know still to this day why not. Never got a hold of her, only talked to people who knew her, and they didn't have any feedback for me. So, but then this nice woman, Jules Thompson, reached out to me. Just, she didn't even know what was going on, just reached out to me and said, "Hey, you know, I love editing. It's something that down the road I want to make a career in, you know, and I do a lot of it. I'm very gifted and thorough in that area, and I'd love to give, you know, your book a shot if you need somebody to do that." Well, little did she know that I, in fact, was in need. And so we talked a few times by phone, and, you know, we decided, hey, let's give this a go, see what happens. I love the idea of having someone who already understands my writing, already understands me, and has a heart for it to edit the book. So we get into the editing process, and then, you know, of no fault of Jules, I mean, just out of the blue, she had a kind of life crisis going on. And that just kind of derailed her for a while, and understandably so. And so, you know, life happens, right? And life happens to people. And we have these projects, and they, you know, and life is more important, and self-care and all that kind of stuff is more important than any project. And I think it's important that we remember that. And so we paused the button on the editing part. And so, you know, it just, you know, and obviously I'm super thankful because, you know, we worked through all that, and the editing of the book is beautiful. I mean, she did a super job, and I think everyone who reads it would acknowledge that. But that was a process. And, you know, that had hiccups along the way, not intentional, not purposed or anything, just life. And then the same thing kind of happened for the layout of the book. And I really wanted the layout of the book to be different. I wanted it to look different. I wanted it to feel different. I wanted it to feel like you're going through a kind of art gallery, that each entry, each message, each essay, whatever you want to call them, would stand alone. And you could, you know, like you go and look at pictures in an art gallery, you'd look at each one and you'd sit there and look at it. And then you turn the page, and then you would look at that one. And, you know, you would just go through it like you were visiting a kind of art gallery of words. And so the layout had to be different. And so I approached one of my friends. This guy is a dear, sweet dude. And super just accommodating and generous. And we got to talking. He's like, "Yeah, I'd love to take on this project," and blah, blah, blah. And everything was set to go, but it just seemed like, you know, apparently, and I didn't know this at the time, but apparently, you know, just some things were going on for him. And he got, you know, a lot of pots in the fire. And so, you know, there wasn't any traction in terms of moving this thing forward. And I just figured he probably had decided to move on to other things. And so there was just this time of, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to move forward with the layout of the book. And it just really never happened. And finally we were able to connect about it. And he just, you know, super apologetic, you know, just no intention, no maliciousness, nothing but the fact that life happens and things happen. And, you know, we get into triage mode, and we just can't juggle everything at the same time. And that's what happened for him. And so finally I found this guy, who lives in Thailand, to lay the book out. Did a fabulous job. We were on Zoom together several times and just could see his family in the background. And, but yet there was a, you know, obvious a challenge with that. I mean, the guy's 13 hours away. And so we had to get up sometimes in the middle of the night, sometimes, you know, in the morning, at weird hours to try to talk things through and visually, you know, construct this thing and figure it all out. So that added just a whole nother dimension to birthing this book. And so that was a stretch. And then maybe most interesting enough, the cover. And I, you know, I had already had the title in mind. I had already had the toilet paper visual in mind, didn't know how to put it all together. And the first person that I interviewed for the cover design, you know, at first, you know, she was all into it. And then I said, hey, I want you just to kind of read and get a feel for the book, because I really want the person who designs the cover to be all in with the concept of the book. I don't want anybody working on the book that doesn't believe in the book and have a heart for the book. And so I did this with each of the people who I had work on the book. And when it got to that, she decided, after reading a little bit, she's like, hey, I just don't think I can design the cover for this, because I just don't support what you're writing here, which is not, I guess, surprising, because there's probably a lot of people who don't. But so we had that experience, and I'm like, oh gosh, am I going to find a cover person who's actually going to be able to sign off on this thing and get their heart into it? So finally I did. And lovely lady in Canada, I got connected with her, she embraced the book, and the first cover concept that she submitted out of several is the one that you see. And just brilliant stuff with the newspaper with the toilet paper. And then we decided to extend the toilet paper to the back cover, which I thought was a great idea. And then the finger paint of the word, you know, shit on the cover, thought that had a lot of different ways that that could be interpreted, which I thought was brilliant. And so that all worked out. So the editing came out beautiful. The layout came out beautiful. The cover came out beautiful, but there was more birth pains in this thing. And obviously, you know, this is just part of the process. But I think sometimes people look at a book cover, they look at a book and they think it's just, you know, they think it looks easier than it is. And for any writer that you're reading, you got to understand there's some real labor that goes on behind the scenes, especially when you're self-publishing. There's the expense of it. There's the labor of it. There's the decisions. There's all that kind of stuff that go on behind the scenes of a book like this, that I think sometimes goes underappreciated. You know, with any artist gets underappreciated with their craft. But I want to finish up, because this is going to be really interesting to you. You know, the behind the scenes of the book. And I want to share my Rob Bell story with you. Back many years, I'm going to say almost 15 years or so ago, when I was a conservative evangelical pastor in Salisbury. And this was right when Rob Bell was coming out with his video series, the Pneuma series of stories and things that he was putting out. And I knew of Rob Bell, but I didn't really know him that well. And I purchased a few of them just because someone suggested them to me to use for like a devotional series with a small group. And so one of the things that you don't know about me, because I haven't talked about it, is that I have this capacity to memorize things very quickly. Whether I read them or whether I hear them, I don't know what it is, but I can soak up stuff, and word by word, I can memorize it very quickly. In fact, as a preacher, I memorized all my messages, and those were probably 40, 45 minute messages. And I would get up at 4 a.m. on Sunday mornings, and I would memorize them word for word. In fact, when I was invited to speak out at Community Church of Joy years and years ago, huge church out in Arizona, they had three or four different services, and I gave the same message at all three services. And one of the people on staff came up to me afterward and said, "Hey, Chris, I was in all these services, and do you memorize your your messages like word for word? And I said, yeah, I do. He said, well, because every message was the same down to the wording. And I said, yeah, I really like to do that. And so I have this thing where I can do that. And, you know, obviously it's been a blessing, but what is a blessing can often be a curse. And that's where the whole Rob Bell thing came in, because I was listening to his Numa videos, and the one, I think it was titled Rain. And he tells a story about how he goes around the block with his son and a storm comes up and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I had the exact same thing with my son. We lived in Florida at the time. And if you live in Florida, you know that storms come up every 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we went around the block and a storm did come up, and very similar experience to Rob Bell and so forth. And so I was writing maybe a once a month article in the local newspaper. And I decided to write about this story that I had with my son. And when I wrote it, and it wasn't anything intentional, just almost subconsciously, some of the phrasing and wording and syntax that Rob Bell had used in his story, you know, bled over into my story. And didn't really think about it. Wasn't really kind of aware about that. It's just something that, you know, kind of happened to me, because I had all those things in my mind and, you know, kind of memorized and sitting there. And then they just kind of crept into the writing of that article. Well, I don't know how, but somehow it got back to Rob Bell. The article had been published, and his lawyers, this true story, his lawyers called me up and said, hey man, what's going on with the article that you wrote in your paper? You know, because it sounds like a lot like Rob Bell, his story. And I'm like, okay. And he says, we're calling the newspaper and having that, you know, retracted, you know, taken out from the website or whatever it was on. And I was just like, wow, this is, and, you know, they analyzed and said like 70% or something like that, you know, was, you know, mimicking or duplicating Rob's, you know, wording and so forth and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we just don't know whose story is it. Is it your story? Is it Rob Bell's story? And I was like, man, I was kind of tongue tied. I didn't know what to even say. I was like blown away by it all. And I honestly kind of scared to death about it. I was like, wow, I didn't mean to do anything like that. And I wasn't trying to duplicate Rob Bell or use, you know, his story, his words. It just, you know, so anyway, you know, that's my Rob Bell story. And I share that with you because there's two things that are really important about kind of what's happened with the book is that, first of all, interestingly enough, and this was surprising because this did not happen with the book I wrote back in 2018, but there were people who were already mimicking and, you know, copying certain aspects of the book, this new book, you know, and it wasn't intentional. It wasn't malicious. But I was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. And, so that was kind of, a bit of a shock and a little disturbing to me that was happening even before the publishing of Stupid Hit Shit Heard in Church, that people, a few people were, you know, kind of doing that. And like I said, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't malicious. At least I don't believe so. But it was surprising to me. And, you know, because of the Rob Bell thing, right after that, I decided that I'm not going to listen and I'm not going to read anybody else and their writing or their talking that are talking about spiritual, theological issues. I just said, I can't do it because I don't ever want to knowingly or unknowingly put anybody else's work into my work. And from that day forward, I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And people might be surprised that I don't read stuff from other theologians and other spiritual writers. I don't do it. And I'm very intentional about it. People say, well, that's a big mistake for you. Well, it's not a mistake for me, because if I'm not careful, I can pick up those words and I'll forget that they're their words and thinking that they're my words because I've got it all memorized in my head. And you know, sometimes it doesn't come out in the wash and it gets put on paper or in words or whatever. And so I got to be super careful about that. And so I've been that way. And a good thing about that Rob Bell story was it also, you know, kind of pushed me into the awareness that, you know, we all need our own voice. We need to find our own voice, because we need all the voices, you know, to these kind of issues that we can get. But they need to be unique voices. We don't need to be copying and mimicking other people. We need to find our own voice. We need to speak from behalf of our own spiritual journey, not the spiritual journeys and thoughts of other people. And so I really became a believer in that. And a believer about that with this book. Some people have already noticed that there are no quotes in the book. It's like, you know, why aren't there any quotes? Well, the reason why there are no quotes is because I didn't quote anybody. This every word in the sentence is speaking out from my own spiritual journey. And I've had people say, well, you know, sometimes your writing sounds like this, or somebody's, you know, sometimes your writing sounds like, you know, Richard Rohr, whoever. I, you know, different people, you know, mention different authors. And I respond back to them. I said, I may know that person by name, but I've never read anything by Richard Rohr. I've never read anything by John Pavlowitz. I've never read one of his articles or books or anything like that. And other people, I don't read them. And it's not because I don't like them. It's because I don't want to ever mimic or copy or, you know, their voice and what they say. I want it to be all authentic, purely authentic, coming from my own spiritual journey. And that's the way this book is. Not one single quote, because there doesn't need to be a quote, because it's all being quoted from me. And so there are no quotes in my Bible. In my book. And that's a big backstory of the book, is that, you know, this is my voice and this is my voice alone. And, you know, Stuart had mentioned to me in this interview that he said, Chris, I really feel with this book, you really have found your voice even more. And I said, well, you know, that's probably true. And so bottom line, I'm excited about the book. I'm thankful for the people who are already reading the book and expressing themselves and the impact the book is having on them. I hope you'll get it. It's on Amazon. Some people have asked, you know, can we find it other places? Any bookstore that you go to can order it for you, and they can get it onto their bookshelves by reaching out to Amazon and doing that. So know that if you don't like using Amazon directly, you can go to your bookstore and they can get it for you. But thankful for all of you who have supported the book, have supported me all along. You are the backstory of it all. You know, every person who endorsed the book, by the way, I reached out and made it available that any person of any gender, of any sexual orientation, of any self-understanding could write an endorsement for the book. And I wanted to make sure that the people who endorsed the book, I didn't seek out any popular names or any, you know, Christian celebrities in the progressive world. Didn't want any of that involved, because I wanted this to be a book from, you know, for all of us, for, you know, our own journey and speaking to that. And so everybody who's endorsed the book is just an ordinary person like me. And I wanted it that way. And was very intentional about that. I'm very thankful for Stuart for writing the afterword, and for Glenn writing the foreword. Two awesome people. You should definitely check out their work that they are doing. Both of them have podcasts, and I think Glenn even has a book coming out soon. Should definitely follow them and support them. And you can contact Jules, the editor. She's a lovely person, and the cover designer is in Canada, and the layout person's in Thailand, and they're all noted in the front of the book as ways that you can get in touch with them should you want to. But super excited about the book, and hope you are too, and thankful for you and your support. Without you, this book would never have happened, and love you much. And as always, grace is brave, be brave.